Velkommen til Engler og hormoner. Inspirasjon og ny kunnskap om helse, selvutvikling og livsstil. For all the women that has given birth and or is expecting to give birth, this week is all about empowering you to make the choices that are best for you. This is all about the woman. It is so important that we take the time to talk about birth and postpartum, especially in these times of pandemic lifestyle, where the closest thing for you to rely on is yourself and the actions you take for preparing and communicating your own needs. This can be more challenging and more rewarding than you could ever imagine. And to guide us through some important, essential reflections points, please welcome Kelsey Ludvigsen. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. Thank you for having me here.
So nice to meet you
virtually. One day in person.
Yeah, exactly. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, Kelsey?
Well, this podcast is being done in English because I'm half American, but I'm also half Norwegian, and I'm married to a Norwegian. My partner is Norwegian, but I used to live in Norway. I had a yoga studio there, Lila Yoga. It's still going, and I sold that. Got pregnant rather quickly and then became postpartum. And so I went from this yoga studio owner and teaching retreats and everything. And everything was very revolved around yoga and my physical practice of yoga. And then I had my postpartum experience and my life pivoted completely. I also, for a couple years, kind of went back and forth on whether I wanted to be a birth doula, because I found birth and the female body in birth just fascinating. But once I was postpartum with my daughter, I thought, I'll leave that up to the professionals. I need to do something with it postpartum, because my experience was so deep and so I want to say life-changing, but also life-shattering.
Yeah.
It obliterated everything I knew. It took away what I considered as my self-care and my mental health, which was my yoga practice. I had a birth injury, and just everything kind of unraveled for me. So my life changed completely because of my postpartum, and I take that as a gift today.
It gave you directions.
Yeah, it gave me such a big direction. Yeah.
I remember getting, like, in my postpartum period, primitive, you know, like I was so over focused on having this narrow vision.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women feel it exactly that way, especially the first time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Everything that I used, like you said, that narrow vision, like everything that I had done, the esoteric, the spiritual, I mean, I did tarot cards and all that. And my first 6 months postpartum, I was like, none of this works. Like, what is the point of it? I had an existential crisis. I was like, what is the universe, you know? And then after I kind of came out of that fog and that bubble, that's when my lens kind of widened. And I wasn't as, but it's you're in survival instincts. Like, you're just in survival mode, especially those first 6 months. When you look at like transitional or transition psychology, they say that around 5 to 6 months is like the peak of your transition. So that'd be 5 to 6 months after giving birth. And women kind of go through this, you know, like, what am I going to do with my life? And then after that 6 month is that peak, and you kind of get more direction in like what's going on. But it's those first 6 months that are life changing.
Mm. And it's so important that the women get support.
Yes. Support is the only way that we fully recover from not only our postpartum, but from pregnancy. I mean, that's what we're doing in our postpartum, is we're recovering from pregnancy and birth. And the only way we can do that, fully recover and really reintroduce ourselves or reintegrate back into the world is from support. And which is kind of triggering for people in the COVID time, because we're told we can't have our pod or our family or our friends come in. And so what is that support? And I talk a lot about the different ways of support. There's the emotional support, the instrumental support, the informational support, and then there's the community support. And so, you know, it's not just one way of having support, of having people in your home every single day, but it can be different levels of it.
Can you tell us a bit more about that, Kelsey?
Yeah. So emotional support, I love to tell, and this, I love to tell my clients that for emotion, you need almost all of those levels of support. So community support would be your family, your friends, your colleagues, if you're part of a church, it would be your church network. It would be your yoga community. If you're in a yoga student, that is your community support. Your emotional support is, I love to call it like your mother board of directors. Like, who is on your board of directors as you come into motherhood? Who do you text and call for specific advice? Or who do you call and text to say, hey, I need a good cry? We all need that person. It's that the person that's on your emotional support there, it's the person that calls you and asks you how you're doing and not your baby. Their first thought is you and not your baby, because your baby's fine. Your baby has you, your partner, and just, you know, and all the love it needs. But you need that friend who's going to ask about you first. And this is, I found recently with my clients, is rather triggering, because a lot of women don't feel they have that friend at the moment that they could really call. And it's almost like this, like, that girlfriend wound that a lot of us maybe get from being in school or high school. We all kind of have it, of just like, you know, we're better friends with guys. It's hard to be friends with girls. So a lot of women that go into their postpartum and maybe don't have like a really good group of girlfriends, this is a really triggering one. And so I have ways to kind of help women figure out who it is, but the emotional support is key, because they're the ones that are checking in on you outside of your partner. If you think of it, in the utero, the amniotic sac has two layers. So, and, you know, and it's protecting the baby. And if one of the layers ruptures, there's one layer holding together the amniotic fluid, the baby, everything contained, while the other layer repairs itself. We need to think of this perinatal psychology. When we come out of the womb, we still need those two layers. So baby has mother, father, or father, father, mother, mother, whatever the dynamic is of the parent relationship. But the mom needs two layers of support. The father needs two layers of support. We forget a lot about the dads. We think dad's fine. Dad didn't go through birth, but dad's going through a huge life change as well. And so mom usually will have the partner, and she needs that other support layer. You can think of it as her two layers of the amniotic sac. But partner cannot have mother. He needs two layers of support. And so this was something that my partner and I had to sit down and talk about. And I was like, who's your emotional support? It can't be me. And so he had to figure out, all right, if I'm having a rough day, which friend am I going to call? And that was like some sticky situations for him to even figure out, like, all right, who's my emotional support? So that's emotional support. I think that one is so important. Then there's instrumental support. Instrumental support is what I call the ones that are coming in and bringing the food, maybe cooking you food, maybe coming in and tidying up your house, your apartment, cleaning. There's an author, he wrote The Postnatal Depletion, and he says, no visitors the first 6 weeks, only staff.
Yeah.
And this can be hard for people to take in, because because in a lot of our culture is you come over and have kafukake and meet the baby. And it's usually within the first week. And we really shouldn't, because you know what? You're so raw in that moment. And if you have that like random uncle who's come over, you're not going to feel 100%. You're getting used to breastfeeding. You have to pull your boob out. If you have that random uncle over, you're going to feel kind of flustered and it's nervous. And also that first week or the first 6 weeks, you can't string a sentence together. The first month is vital and so important for processing the physical birth that it's really hard to have a conversation about the weather with some, you know, a random uncle or an aunt. So that's why I say the first 6 weeks, no visitors, only staff. If family get triggered by that, then they're more than welcome to chip in and bring over a meal. If they want to see baby, they have to bring something. They have to bring a dinner. They have to bring the next meal you're about to eat. They have to put a load of laundry on. For people that don't have family around, so that was my case. I live in Copenhagen and I don't have any family that could support us. My husband and I had a savings account for our postpartum. And so we hired a cleaning lady to come every 2 weeks. And this is a financial privilege, but it is something that we saved for about 9 months when we found out we were pregnant. 5% of our salary went into this account to support us instrumentally because we knew we did not have family. Mm. And then the last form of support is informational support. So it's whether you've got a postpartum doula, books, take a postpartum course. It's kind of all the information that you can get from to help support you in your postpartum. So it's a lot of people think that support is just kind of, you know, the family that comes in and checks on you, but there's a lot of layers to it because sometimes your family won't be the ones to check in on you emotionally and you need that girlfriend or that friend to do it.
I love that.
I think it's interesting because making choices like you have described here, Kelsey, it will be new for many people to, one, receive that amount of support and ask for it, but also not living up to expectations for letting family get a visit. And we're quite independent as well. Like asking people to do our laundry is not it's not something we usually do.
No.
Do you meet any level of resistance to this?
Oh my gosh, every day. So much resistance in it because we are raised as independent women and that we can do it all on our own. But the postpartum time is not the time to prove to yourself that you can be independent. I believe postpartum wellness is dependent on postpartum dependence. It is not the time for postpartum independence, but I meet a ton of resistance. And so what I do with a lot of clients is we meet in the middle and I say, set up a meal train. And a meal train is kind of like a softer integration into it. And so a meal train, it's a website, but you could also just do an Excel spreadsheet or whatever. And so I've just done one for my sister-in-law. And it's 6 weeks worth of dinners and childcare twice a week and someone that comes and cleans once a week. And it has been so incredible to witness the amount of people that are showing up to clean her home. You know, it's like a friend who's already had a baby and gets it. And it's really incredible. And this meal train goes beyond just your local community because we have friends all over the world. Everyone does. We have contacts all over the world. And so, you know, her mother and her cousins live in Canada and they're able to send a gift card to Bucket Hansen so that they can have breakfast one day, you know? So it doesn't need to be just people in your physical proximity that drop off food. It can be friends from all over the world that can just buy a gift card for you or buy you your sushi for Friday night. So this has been a really great way for her to... She knew what her needs is. This is baby number two. She knew that food was going to be a big thing and childcare and cleaning. Those were her three needs. And so she put that into the meal train and she's leaving it open to having family come and visit. But also in the meal train, then they'll bring food because they've signed up for that day. Like, oh, I'll bring a dish and then I'll come and visit the baby. So it's kind of like goes hand in hand. And I found this to be kind of a softer way rather than saying verbally, don't come unless you're going to do something. Because then people are going to be like, well, that's awkward. You know, like, what are you talking about? And I find the meal train is just like a physical representation for family to see, this is what she needs. How can I support her and come and see the baby? Because everyone wants to just come see the baby.
I love that you're saying it so clear, Kelsey. And thank you.
I think it's sometimes hard because I have so many ideas and I'm quite emotionally wrapped up in the postpartum time and why we need support. So I can really go off the ledge, the cliff with what I'm talking about. But I think it's so important. We cannot physically recover and physically heal if we do not have support. Support is like the umbrella that brings us back. brings us back whole. Like we come back and come back into our communities, feeling rested and rejuvenated and empowered.
Can we tap into the area about independence and dependence? Because this is quite a tough one, I think. And a lot of women are talking about getting their life back and getting their body back with the mind of the one you were before you were pregnant. What are your thoughts on this?
So I love that. I love when people say, I want my life back or I want my body back after birth. And I tell them when you, cause so we go through this developmental stage called matrescence, and it's the changes in the brain that there are scientific studies and brain scans done on it. Our brain changes. We can never go back to who we were before motherhood. And so when someone says, I want my body back, I want my life back, I say, so when you were 18, did you miss your pre-adolescent body? Like, did you want your pre-adolescent body back? Or did you want your pre-adolescent thoughts and life back? No, like we have to go through that adolescent stage and we have to go through matrescence. You will just have a new body. You don't want that body back. You don't want that life back. Yeah, you can grieve it. And I think that's one of the things that we don't allow ourselves in the postpartum is to allow grief to move through us. Mm-hmm. And my postpartum teacher believes that it's actually grief that we're feeling, where a lot of people think it's postpartum depression, maybe. And there are severe cases. I respect that and understand that. But I think a lot of us in the first couple of weeks are actually just moving through a ton of grief that, you know, especially if you're a first time mom, I still get pangs of grief from like my life before motherhood. And I think it's about normalizing that grief is allowed to emerge in those weeks and holding space for that. And I think normalizing that we've moved from being independent to dependent. I learned the lesson of being dependent early on in my pregnancy. It should not be called morning sickness. I threw up 24/7 for 20 weeks and I was heavily dependent on my partner. I couldn't open the fridge without throwing up. I couldn't go into a grocery store for 25 weeks. And he had to do all the cooking, all the grocery shopping, all the taking out trash. So I learned really early on that, like, if I'm going to make this happen, if I'm going to, you know, become a mother, I need to become dependent on him and be okay with it. And you know what? Our partners do kind of love it. Like, that was where my partner was like, ooh, I know how to help her, because your partner doesn't know how to show up for you otherwise. But if you can ask, like, this is what I need, it makes them feel they have a purpose in some way. You know, they're like, great, I can't take away her, the tear that she had from birth. I can't take away, you know, the bleeding that she's having right now. And I can't help her in that way. But what I can do is make her a really bomb breakfast and like an awesome lunch. And that gives them a purpose rather than kind of feeling like they're useless. So I think, you know, becoming dependent on our partner is just kind of is imperative. And also I think helps strengthen the relationship. I think we go through phases in our life where they're dependent on us and we're dependent on them. And this is just one of those phases where you're allowed to be dependent on someone else. And if you don't have a partner, if you're a single parent, I bow down to you. That is, you know, single parents, you are amazing, but find that other person in your life that you can be dependent on.
So to get to this point where you know what you actually need and how to ask for it, how do you work with finding the areas where your needs are and also communicating them in a way that empowers the relationship as well?
Yeah. So first, before we figure out the needs of within our relationship with our partner, we need to figure out like, what are our needs? And I think that's something, you know, if you're in the yoga community or the personal development community, inquiry is just kind of second nature and you're curious about yourself. But for those who maybe aren't interested in personal development, I still think you need to get curious about yourself. And so really figuring about what your needs is like asking the tough questions. And what I have all my clients do is we figure out their coping skills. There's a lot of studies that have been done. I had maybe the majority of my postpartum mothers in the postpartum examples were, they were having a horrible time. And then I had like two or three people that were just loving their postpartum. And I got very curious as to why. Like, why are you so empowered? Why are you thriving in your postpartum? Because I'm not. And so I just went down the rabbit hole, I like to call the Google hole. And I found that resiliency, so how resilient you are, has a huge effect on your postpartum experience. The level of self-esteem, so how much self-respect and self-worth do you feel about yourself? And one that really surprised me was your attachment style. So if you're a securely attached or insecurely attached adult, that is a huge effect on whether you'll get postpartum depression or not. And so I work a lot with my clients in figuring out, you know, what are your coping skills? What's in your coping toolbox? So what I ask them would be, when you're triggered, what would you need in that moment? Or a mother could ask herself, I hope I don't struggle so much with blank, but if I do, this will help blank. And it's kind of digging in, you know, having safe stepping away techniques. If you're home alone with a baby and a baby's screaming and crying all morning, you need help. So really talking to mom, what would be your safe stepping away technique? What is in your coping toolbox for that then? You know, and really and talking about the hard stuff, like, okay, hey, your partner's been at work all day. You're at home with your baby and toddler and you're about to have a mental breakdown. What are you going to do? And getting them to think about it beforehand, because you know what? Those first couple of weeks, like I said, you can't string a sentence together. How on earth are you going to pick up, you know, figure out your coping skills then? And so coping skills there's a lot of studies that have been done on that. And the amount of coping skills that women have going into their postpartum has a huge effect on their postpartum experience.
This is a really good angle. And I like the way reflecting upon this actually can make you thrive through the postpartum period and handle things in the moment without having all the extra stress it is to lack the kind of skills you're describing. So what other things is it that you make women think about before their postpartum period?
Well, actually I have three layers to what I consider the postpartum. And the first layer is what everyone in the world knows, and that's that six-week checkup. And they go and get their six-week checkup and the doctor tells them, you're ready to have sex and you're ready to go about your life as normal. And that's kind of the extent of their information about postpartum. The second layer, I believe, in postpartum is to have a healthy postpartum. These are the things you'd need. You'd have to have realistic expectations. You touched upon that earlier of just like, you know, what are realistic expectations? We have unrealistic expectations from social media and Hollywood about what motherhood is. And so getting really real with yourself about your expectations. And then figuring out like what is your emotional and your coping strategies. Like we talked about, like figuring out what's your emotional and support focused, you know, figuring out how to cope there. And then internal resources, which I mentioned, was self-esteem and, having that self-respect for yourself and feeling that self-worth and self-mastery. You know, I remember the first time my daughter was born with the longest nails ever. And I asked the health nurse that came home and I said, can you please cut them for me? And she's like, this is a perfect example for you to do it. And it was the hardest thing I did that day. But wow, did I feel empowered afterwards. And now, you know, I'm still the cutting her nails champion. But there's like that self-mastery and just really realizing like, okay, wow, yesterday I couldn't do it, but today I can do it. So having those internal resources are really important. And then the third layer that I feel is important for postpartum that can really give you that empowered postpartum is full physical recovery. And what is full physical recovery? It's rest. It's body work. So whether that's going to a physical therapist, an osteopath, or, you know, getting a massage. And then nourishing food. You know, we need to fill up our micronutrients that were taken from baby and placenta. And so that's really, really important. And then the second thing that I feel is important for an empowered postpartum is self-care. The mother's nervous system is regulating the child's nervous system until the age of 7. And so if mom isn't doing well, baby won't do well. And so when, you know, a lot of the times if a baby is fussy or kind of agitated, we shouldn't be thinking, okay, what do I need to diagnose this baby with? We should be looking at like, well, how's the mom doing? Mm-hmm. That's really, really, really critical. So self-care is just taking care of yourself. And there was a study done in the UK where they found that at 6 months postpartum, this was done through the NHS, at 6 months postpartum, 80% of women weren't taking care of themselves, like taking daily showers. I mean, that's huge. That's a huge amount of women that are still not taking care of themselves at 6 months postpartum. And then the third thing that I think is so important for an empowered postpartum or just postpartum in general is being witnessed by your community that you have gone through a huge transition. I think this is why if we don't get that acknowledgement and we don't get that witnessing from family and friends, like, wow, you've changed. This is incredible. Tell us, what have you learned from your experience? If we don't get that, we are left feeling disorientated and disembodied. And we can see this with a lot of women that change jobs during their postpartum, or they get like crazy drastic haircut or whatever. They change their, you know, they change you. You can see it. And so when women aren't being witnessed by their community, they're left feeling lost in their lives. And so that is so important to help a mother come back, you know, to have her return from the underworld, you know, if you want to talk in myths.
This is so amazing. And I think this transformation you're talking about is both physical and it's mm-hmm. emotional mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. being acknowledged for that. Yeah. I don't think I've heard anyone say it before, Kelsey. Mm. And it's so basic.
Yeah.
Right. How many things that are basic do we forget about? Because we are so technical and we want to do the pelvic floor exercises with an app and we want to do everything in a new way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, exactly. But how is it that we have forgot about all these basic human understandable things that we need to do to each other?
Yeah, we've completely forgotten. And I think that's part of the postpartum is this, it's this time of remembering. You know, I compare, when I was pregnant, I'm very fortunate. I have both my grandmothers and grandfathers, but I remember talking to my Norwegian grandmother and just kind of like, what was your postpartum like? And she was in like a fødestue, you know, a birthing clinic for 14 days. And then her mom moved in with her afterwards to tend to her. But somewhere between my grandmother and me, our postpartum culture has completely changed. And she was, you know, she was just in a little town outside Bergen. And so, you know, it's this coming back. I think it's something to do with our mother's generation where all of a sudden they went into the workforce. And if they went on, you know, and if a mother goes on maternity leave, all her friends are at work. Well, in our grandmother's generation, none of them were really working. So they were there to support each other. And so I think the postpartum is this time of remembering, you know, what it is to be in community and what it is to be held and seen and to be fully seen. And I think that's something that a lot of women aren't experiencing, to be fully seen in what change they've been through. I think a lot of women feel forgotten and kind of like they've just, they've been forgotten.
Hmm. Yeah. And then still it's like, where your other half nationality come from, Kelsey, it's completely different in Norway to the US and Canada, where you have to return to work really early. What are your experiences from that area?
Yeah, you know what? That's one of the reasons why I left the States. I was working in the States I was 22, and one of my employees was pregnant. She went and gave birth, came back 3 days later. And I was like, well, what are you doing here? And she said, I don't get paid maternity leave. Like, I'm a single mom. I have to be back at work. And I looked into my contract to see like, well, what is this? And I saw that I would not get any paid maternity leave. And I put my 3 months notice in. And I said, that is not the quality of life I want. I was living in Hawaii. And I was like, I am not going to fall in love with a Hawaiian guy and then have a baby here and have, you know, just no maternity leave. I grew up with, you know, a half a Norwegian culture where that's what was the normal. And so I put my 3 months in and I moved back to Europe. But yeah, it's a huge difference because I see it in the States where women are hungry for that postpartum information and they yearn and they crave that time that they can have with their baby. And so they're actually the most hungry for this information and actually accept it and take it in. While I find sometimes in Europe where women have a year's worth of maternity leave, they want this kind of quickly like, all right, I've given birth now what else? And, you know, I'm like, I'm going to get to this baby group and this, and it's all this long to-do list. Mm. And so there's a huge difference with the two cultures actually. And I think, and I find it so interesting when we have full maternity leave and full pay and we don't use it fully for rest.
Yeah. And you said that rest is key for postpartum women. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So why is rest so important? Postpartum rest is postmenopausal ease. So, you know, I think our generation, we live in a YOLO culture. You know, you only live once. A lot of my friends don't save for retirement because you're like, I've got to spend my money now. Like, you only live once, blah, blah. We can't YOLO our postpartum because we're going to hit that retirement age, that menopausal age. And we're all of a sudden going to realize, wow, I have an organ falling out of my vagina. I'm having a prolapse. Like, what the hell happened here? And it's because, oh, well, what did you do during your postpartum? I got up day 3 and walked home from the hospital, you know? And so I think it's really, really important that the care and the rest that you're investing in yourself in your postpartum period is for your future self. Your future self is thanking you already. I would like, you know, there's those videos and pictures that sometimes pop up on Instagram of like a 90-year-old woman that's running a marathon. I want to be 90 years old where I can maybe still run and not have an organ coming out, you know, prolapsing out of me. So postpartum rest is important because it creates postmenopausal ease. But also, you know, and then also if you Google menopause and pelvic organ prolapse, it comes up as like this normal. And you said it perfectly, Mona, like just because something is common doesn't mean that it's normal. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear that, you know, when friends say, oh, when I laugh, I pee, or if I jump on a trampoline, I pee, everyone says it. It doesn't mean it's right. And that is where rest comes in. Another reason why we rest is for our uterine health. That's for our uterus. In a non-pregnant body, so a non-pregnant uterus, it weighs about 80 grams. And then when we have our period, it weighs about 225 grams. At 40 weeks, the uterus weighs 1.3 kilos. If you add in a baby, which on average is maybe 3 to 3.4 kilos, and you add in a placenta at 700 grams, your uterus is carrying over 5 kilos of weight. That is incredible, and a lot of weight on the pelvic floor and the stretching of the 14 uterine ligaments that are holding this fabulous free-floating organ in place. And these ligaments that are attached to the uterus are stretched to their max capacity during those 40 weeks. It's stretched to its max capacity. And this is comparable, for example, to a first degree sports tear of a ligament. And when we have a first degree tear in a ligament from a sports injury, we are told to rest for 3 to 4 months. But at 6 weeks postpartum, a woman goes in for her check and the doctor says nothing about, hey, your uterine ligaments are still really stretched and need to rest. You need to rest for another 3 to 4 months. No one's getting this information. And on top of that, we have these high amounts of relaxin pump. It's a hormone, relaxin is pumping through our body, and it's making the uterine ligaments even more susceptible to injury. And so our uterine ligaments actually need 3 to 6 months worth of rest. And we're not getting this. If someone twists their ankle or gets a strain in their ankle, they're expected to rest for 3 to 4 months. You're not expected to run after 6 weeks. Another reason for rest would be the placental wound. So it's where the placenta detaches from the uterus. And we literally made an organ in our body for 9 months and then we birthed that organ. If you lost an appendix, you would not be expected to, I had not lost, I didn't lose it, but I had my appendix removed at 13. And I remember my doctor said, you are not allowed to do PE, so physical, like the gym team, for 10 weeks, 6 to 10 weeks. I remember being very excited then, but no one is being told that in their postpartum, that they, even though they have birthed an organ that is literally one of the reasons for our postpartum bleeding is from that placental wound, we are still not told to rest completely. And it's all of these things is so important. This is why we rest, why it's so important to rest.
So I know you're talking about radical rest.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so interesting because the way we interpret, this is so interesting because the way we understand the words that are said about mm-hmm. what is rest, mm-hmm. what is exercise, what is movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. earlier you just said this, do not walk home from hospital 3 days after birth. Mm-hmm. But most women in Norway will expect that at their 6 week checkup, they will be told if they can or cannot exercise.
Yeah.
And this is it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about rest, activity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is rest? Because probably people are thinking like, what am I supposed to be in bed for 6 months? Not at all. The general kind of rule is the first 5 days in bed, the next 5 days on the bed, and the last 5 days around the bed. And that's kind of like your first 15 days, you should be really close to your bed or the couch. After that, what I tell my clients is after the first month, only rest, like really rest. Think about walking from, you know, bed to bathroom to pee, bed to kitchen, whatever it is. The second month, you can start doing kind of like light stretching. You can start doing restorative yoga. It's not even time to do yin yoga because you still have such high relaxin in your body and you're also still kind of maybe physically processing any birth injuries or if you had a pregnancy injury. And you can start doing like short walks around your apartment, you know, nothing extraneous. And at 3 months postpartum, then you can think about going for maybe a little bit of a longer walk. But really that whole mark of like, you know, 3 to 6 months, we should be resting it, there. You can stretch in there. And also a lot of people don't think of it, but breathing is a form of movement and it's a form of movement for the diaphragm and for the organs. It's that kind of massaging of the organs back into their place. There's so much happening in the body that we need to just give it time, you know? And so say you're at 6 weeks postpartum and you've gone for a short walk. Can you now lay down and take one of the naps with your baby so that you can rest? It doesn't mean you're in bed 24/7. It just means that you have pockets of time throughout the day where you are in bed. But I definitely tell my clients the first 2 weeks, you should be in or on your bed. And a lot of people are shocked when they hear that I was fully done with my postpartum bleeding at 16 days. And that's because I was in bed and I walked to the bathroom or whatever. And that is what's normal or not normal. Sorry, that's not normal. That is what like the medical system says is actually what's supposed to happen. By day 14, we should only be having mucus, like clear mucus really. But a lot of women are bleeding longer than that. And that is a sign that you're doing too much. So I always tell my clients, if you start if you're still bleeding at 6 weeks postpartum, it means you're still doing too much. And what happened was I did a really long walk. So I was done bleeding at 2 weeks. And then I did a super long walk at 6 weeks postpartum. And I started bleeding again. And I thought it was my period because I bled for 2 days. And I thought, wow, how am I getting my period at 6 weeks postpartum? But it wasn't. It was my body saying, hey, I'm not done healing. I may have been quiet with the bleeding for 4 weeks, but we've still got a wound healing. And so let your bleeding be an indicator of how much you're doing and where you need to be, how much you need to be resting.
Mm, I like that thought.
Mm.
So rest is kind of a nourishing thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more about what we can do to nourish the mind, the soul, and
the body?
Body.
yeah, definitely. I think all those three are so important for emotional, mental well-being. So nourishing the body, what's really important there is a physical recovery, and getting help with your physical recovery, but also nourishment and like what kind of food you're taking in. And so I always tell my clients that eat soft foods, kind of like baby food, until you have your first poop, because a lot of women can have their first poop as being constipation. And that can be quite stressful if you've had a vaginal birth or C-section, both. The first poop is like one of women's like biggest like fears after labor. So you want to eat the softest of foods until you have your first poop and or you have a regular poop. I read a really scary statistic or note in a medical text, which was that some doctors can see it as normal to not have a bowel movement the first 14 days, which I think is horrendous. Like that, this was in like a gynecologist like note textbook, which I think is horrible, because our bowel movements is another way for us to remove excess hormones. And it's all the excess hormones that are from the body for pregnancy. And so we need that extra avenue. You know, okay, we release those excess hormones through sweat and tears and the bleeding in our postpartum bleeding, but it's also through our first poop. So I don't agree that a woman should be constipated or not have a bowel movement the first 14 days. So I say eat soft foods, baby food, until you have your first poop. You also need to replenish your micronutrients that were used up from baby during the pregnancy. So that's really, really key. And gut health is so important. If you want to think of like from a nervous system perspective of going through labor, that has a huge shock to our microbial health and our gut. And so you want to bring back that good micro, probiotics into the system. And I also really have a huge emphasis on this. You should love the food that you're eating. I had a postpartum cookbook, and half the recipes were stuff that I was not used to and would never eat on a day-to-day basis. And for some reason, I made my husband make those meals for me in my postpartum, and it was hard to eat because I personally do not like mushrooms, but it was like this huge mushroom stew that was supposed to be really good for my connective tissue. And it was horrendous. And so I tell my clients, eat food that you love, because you know what? You need the oxytocin so that you have the milk freely flowing through you. If you're eating something you hate, you betcha that's going to be one way for you to, you know, not have a milk letdown. So have food that you love. That's really, really important. So that would be for nourishing your body. Specifically is for the gut health.
So Kelsey, yeah, about the nutrients you talked about, why is it that we have this shock to the system and our gut health while going through a pregnancy and the birth?
Well, it's more specifically to the birth. It's just a shock. It's like, you know, when you go into labor, your body goes into fight, flight, or freeze, which is totally normal. We're supposed to go into that. Because so what it does is it kind of shuts down all your digestive functions, and it shuts down just everything. And so the body is purely focused on getting baby out. And this has a huge effect on the gut health, because all of a sudden those good probiotics are being used in that way.
Oh, this is interesting. I didn't know about that. So like the autonomic nervous response is actually affecting the gut health. And so I was really worried about your statement that you could be going 14 days without having a poop postpartum. Yes. I feel so sorry for the mom that is experiencing this, because it's like you say, it's one of the biggest fears.
Yep. And not only sorry for the mom, but like sorry for the mom that she's being told that that's okay. Because that is not okay. Like we should be having daily bowel movements. And it is, you know, all right, if you don't have a bowel movement the first day or second day after your birth, you're probably still in your fight or flight response. You're still probably, you know, especially if you maybe had a traumatic birth, you might take a little bit longer to have your first poop, because your body's probably like, hey, I'm still in super fight or flight. I can't even think about digesting food at the moment. And so that might be a reason why you're not having a bowel movement. But otherwise, you really should be having a bowel movement after day three.
So getting more specific into the micronutrients you were talking about, are there any specific supplements you recommend to your women?
Oh, I don't have, you know, you need to be a pretty much, I tell a lot of women, keep your prenatals going. A lot of women just think, oh, now I can be finished taking my prenatals. You should be taking prenatals probably the entire time that you're breastfeeding. Omega-3 is huge. You can think of omega-3 in the last trimester of your pregnancy. It's kind of like your baby has a straw up to your brain and it's just siphoning. So it's just kind of like sucking out all those good fats from your brain into its own body. And so you really need to up your omega-3s in the third trimester, but also in the postpartum because of breastfeeding. And then iron. Iron's a huge one, especially for as long as you're bleeding, you need to be taking iron. For me, the best way for me to supplement my iron was through herbal infusions, nettle tea, and I would make infusions. So it sits overnight for 8 hours and then I would have it for 2 days to be able to drink. And that's really a really nourishing and beautiful way to get in your iron.
And also, of course, go to your doctor and get your levels checked postpartum.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I tell a lot of clients to get them checked after 6 weeks, just because we want to give the body, you know, we have so much faith and trust in the pregnant body. You know, we don't take a pill to keep ourselves pregnant. You know, we know the body can do it. But for some reason, we come into the postpartum time and we think, oh, I've got to take this adaptogen and I've got to take this pill and I've got to, you know, do all these things. It's like, why don't you trust the body to be postpartum as well and to kind of balance and calibrate on its own, just like we gave that amount of faith to our pregnant body to grow a baby. Hmm. And definitely get your levels checked. So if you're like, you know, feeling really depleted at especially 3 months, to go get your hormonal panel done. And also, you know, extreme anxiety or depression, you'd want to get your hormonal done to see what your thyroid is like. That's a really, really big thing.
Oh, and then you said something about collagen. Would you like to?
Oh, collagen. Well, I mean, collagen is imperative for connective tissue health. And so, you know, if you think about it, all the connective tissue in the body and just the healing of the body. So collagen is really, really key. And that is found in bone broth. If you're a vegan or vegetarian, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say, it's hard to find, you know, a real collagen, but you can. There's like some algae one, I think. But otherwise, bone broth is so nourishing and so healing. And it doesn't only give you collagen, but it gives you those micronutrients, other micronutrients that maybe you're depleted in.
And we are healing our connective tissue.
Yeah.
After giving birth is so important.
So important. Yeah, it's so important. Mm-hmm.
So the body is quite... let's say it's in your face after you've given birth. It's like highly obvious. If you do pay attention to anything, it will be your body because you can notice something is happening.
Yeah.
But what about nourishing your soul and your mind?
So for the soul, I always tell my clients to make themselves, I call it the oxytocin list or the joy list. And it's this list of things that bring you joy. So for me, on my list was friends. And if I was having a rough day, my partner would say, hey, do you want to watch an episode of Friends? And I immediately would bring in that laughter, raise my oxytocin, and kind of, you know, bring me out of a funk if I was in. Write your oxytocin and joy list and put it on the fridge so your partner can be there to remind you. Because you know what? You're not going to be reminding yourself. You're in total survival mode. And you're also in like, figuring out like what's baby need, like, oh, baby, you're listening to every, you're tracking from a nervous system perspective. You're tracking your child the entire time. That's why a lot of moms can't sleep when baby sleeps, because if a baby has a hiccup, the mom is like, oof, you know, fight or flight. So really like, you know, have your partner remind you what you need to do to take care of yourself and have that list on there so that he remembers too. So that's what I say for the soul. And for nourishing your mind, boundaries around social media. Social media can be a huge trigger for mental health in the postpartum. And so really setting your boundaries around it, whether that is, you know, only an hour a day or, you know, or deleting people on your account that trigger you. You can mute them, and there's that function on Instagram, but really setting boundaries around social media, because that's going to affect your mental health a lot. I try to tell my clients, if they can, the first month, to have really strict boundaries with social media. And then also any toxic people in your life, like, just tell them, hey, I'm going to be out of your life for a couple weeks, and then maybe we can come back. But really limiting your interaction with it. If there's anyone toxic or that has always kind of, what do you call it, advice that you're really not asking for, unsolicited advice. You don't really want that. And so really getting clear, this is really important for mental health, I think.
Oh, those are good points. And also, again, boundaries and choices. That could be challenging to make when you are in a vulnerable position.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very, very vulnerable and really difficult to make, because I think especially around social media, there's a lot of, especially in the first few weeks, a lot of laying around and resting. And we're not used to being bored or having nothing to do and not being so-called, you know, I'm using air quotes here, productive. Mm-hmm. And social media creeps in. And so that's one of the questions I ask my clients is, when you want to numb out, what is your numbing tool and what could you use instead? And I think that's really important to figure out. And that's kind of another inquiry for you to make for your postpartum time. Because if you're numbing out something, you're usually numbing out maybe grief that's coming up, or sadness about maybe how your birth went, or anger about how your body's not recovering, or whatever it is. We don't want to numb those feelings out. We want to move them through. I mean, that is emotion. It's energy in motion. Mm-hmm. So we want to move it through the body. And when we keep tapping into our phones in those early weeks, we're kind of stagnating our recovery, our mental and emotional recovery. And so figuring out, like, yeah, you know what? Instagram is my personal numbing tool, but I have a relationship around it and boundaries when I use it and when I can't use it. And so if I'm in that part of my day where I'm not supposed to be using it, but I feel like I need to numb out, then I tap into another tool of mine. What can I do instead? I can dance to a song. I can go out, sit on the balcony and get some sunlight on my face. So I figure other positive coping skills.
That's interesting. Do you have any other suggestions for numbing tools that are better for us?
Yeah, numbing tools that are better for us. Morning pages.
Journaling.
Journaling. And that is one of the things. So I have in my course that I'm running right now called The Passage, and I have a self-care plan, like what self-care can you do for yourself in each month in the fourth trimester? And every single month, Morning Pages is under the mental one, because it's just kind of like a brain dump. And it's really just like your unfiltered thoughts just coming out on paper. I think journaling is super, super powerful. It is one of my most treasured things that I have on my nightstand. I still have it on my nightstand. I have my postpartum journal, and I journaled every single day for 40 days. And I love going back to it and just seeing like where I was, you know, and I can come back in my physical body and just, whoa, I remember that feeling. And so really documenting, you know, if you think about on a historical level, that's what the only thing that women had for hundreds of years were their journals. That is how we know how women felt and lived, you know, hundreds of years ago. It's through their journals, and we can still do that today.
I think it's interesting because over the episodes that we have had this year, mm-hmm. journaling and morning pages mm-hmm. has been mm-hmm. mentioned so many times, both with yeah. creativity, with yeah. tracking your cycle, yes. and now the postpartum.
Yeah.
So it's about getting to know yourself, really.
Yeah. It's one of the best tools to get to know yourself. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And it's, you know what, I think it's also such a gift, because so the journal I have is from when the day I found out I was pregnant until 6 months postpartum. And one day I'll give that to my daughter.
Yeah.
If she chooses to have a child of her own, so that she can see what my process was mentally and emotionally during pregnancy, but also in the postpartum, because it wasn't all pretty. And I want her to know that, you know, and if she feels that there was like, you know, some kind of unresolved issue, it could have been that 1 month that I was postpartum and felt deep anxiety and depression. And she can be like, oh, that's it. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what you were going through at that time. And so I think it's, you know, a kind of a, you know, and you don't have to give your journal to your child, but I wish I had had my mom's or my grandmother's journal to like kind of peek into like, what was your underworld like?
Mm. Yeah. The unedited version.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's an honor to actually get to know yourself. And it should be the most interesting person in the world to get to know.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. And I think your postpartum self can be one of the most enriching and life-changing ones to get to know as well. I think if we don't get to know ourselves in the postpartum, we've missed a really pivotal missed a really pivotal form of ourselves of not getting to know. I think it was Ingvild, you said that, oh, you know, I'm 2 years ago, I went on Mama Padm and I wish I'd had this information. And I've really been diving into that of like, okay, there are a lot of moms that might be listening to this and been like, wow, I didn't give myself this. How I missed that opportunity. And I don't believe that's true. I think we can use our menstrual cycle. And I think we can use our period to heal the part of our postpartum we didn't do. So when you have your period, rest a little bit more. Eat some good nourishing food. Journal. You can heal your postpartum that maybe you didn't have in your menstrual cycle.
Oh, that's a beautiful thought. Mm. And that gives us this opportunity to not feel that we have lost out or feel ashamed that we didn't do enough.
Exactly.
So this thing about how our hormones and also our nervous system is affected by this transition, do you have any thoughts in specific on how we can support our body on that level?
Yeah, I could talk about nervous system health all day, but I think for our nervous system is contingent or relies heavily on our self care. And I tell moms, start your self care from day one postpartum. Like, don't wait until 2 weeks and you figured stuff out. Like, start from day one. There's this really great study that came out of Sweden of the impact on fathers' brains and how their brains can be rewired if they have skin to skin with their baby. So give your partner that chance to have 10 minutes of skin to skin, and then you have 10 minutes to yourself, and do that every single day. Have time for yourself. Set that. And self-care helps your nervous system balance. Like, it has a regulated, you need to regulate your nervous system. It is through self-care. And so start that from day one, build that habit. And I would actually say, if you're pregnant, start right now in your pregnancy. What are you doing for yourself on a physical, emotional, and mental level that helps regulate your nervous system? I had such a great example with one of my clients. She felt the only way she could regulate her nervous system on a physical level was swimming. She loved to swim. You can't swim postpartum for like, what is it, 6-7 weeks? Mm-hmm. And so she wasn't feeling that she could regulate herself. So we had to figure out and kind of brainstorm, all right, what are other ways that we can regulate our nervous system on a physical level? And the hormonal shift. I have gone down the Google hole, the rabbit hole on this one. I love my apps that tell me what's going on with me hormonally during my menstrual cycle. And I was obsessed with my pregnancy app that was like, today you grew a toe, you know, and your blood volume has gone up this amount. Like, I found it so fascinating. And then when I became postpartum, I was like, well, what's happening now? You know, is my body just like, is nothing happening? But there's so much happening on a hormonal level from the time that, so if you think of it, when we're pregnant, the hormones that are pumping through our body are on such a high level. It's like taking 100 birth control pills. So Peapilet, it's like taking 100 a day to keep, you know, baby growing and everything. And then once we birth the placenta, which happens within the first hour of giving birth, it is like going cold turkey. It's like getting rid of those 100 pills, and we don't get to have those 100 pills anymore. And that is a huge drastic shift and drastic fall for us on a hormonal level. And I think one of my biggest tips for women is to understand your hormones in the postpartum. And that is part of postpartum recovery as well, is understanding that all your emotions are normal. You're going to have a super high for 24 hours, 48 hours after birth. And then you're going to have what they call the baby blues day three. And that's super normal. And letting your partner know this as well. Because I think some partners, all of a sudden day three, they're like, oh my God, what's going on? Like, my wife is up and down and everything, and it's normal. And so having our partners with this information it gives them the empowerment to be like, hey, remember your hormones, progesterone and estrogen just plummeted today because you birthed the placenta. And what that does to your hormones is it makes you feel really weepy and emotional. So what you're going through is normal.
Yeah. Knowledge is power, isn't it?
Knowledge is power. And it's not just maternal knowledge, but it's giving that knowledge onto the partners as well.
Yeah. So I am sure that the women that listen to this and get curious, they want to read more. Hmm. Can you give us some tips on where to look for more information?
Yeah, so there's a couple books. There's The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Johnson. There's The First 40 Days. There's The Postnatal Depletion by Oscar. And then Aviva Ram, she's a midwife turned doctor in the United States. She has a book. It's kind of outdated. I think she wrote it in the 80s or 90s, but it's still so rich of information. And she comes more from like a holistic perspective. So she talks about yoga and breath and nutrients and everything. I think those are really, really great books. And then also just finding, you know, whether it's a doula or a coach that can help you move through this transition, because we're not supposed to do it alone. Our grandmothers and great-great-grandmothers weren't doing it alone. And sometimes now we just need to reach out and ask for a little extra help.
I'm so glad you're here, Kelsey. And I think it's kind of interesting. We're actually sending this for the week of the Women's Day. And with the postpartum health, it's really one of the aspects where we have not improved, even though we have come further with the working and equal rights. This is one of the areas we maybe forgot.
Yep. I think so too. I think, the postpartum has really been forgotten, and I'm coming into a time right now where women are starting to remember that on a cellular level, things were done differently. Like, we have it on a cellular level. Our bodies remember support from a maternal perspective, but we haven't physically received it yet, I think, especially our generation. And I think that's what our generation is working hard on, is like, what's happening with my brain after I give birth, because I don't feel normal. And like, what's happening with my body? I think our generation asks a lot of questions and are curious, which I think is fantastic. But I think we also just need to, we need to start that remembering process.
Wow, yeah. Thank you so much, Kelsey.
Thank you so much.
So empowering and so wonderful to hear you talk about your passion.
Thank you. It really is.
I think it's great, like, for all the independent women out there, try to take this in and train yourself to be dependent and take responsibility for your own physical and emotional body postpartum. You can also share this with a sister or a mom or someone you know that you think would like to hear about this. And we would like to hear your feedback as well. We'd love to hear your stories and the questions you have about this topic. So we would like all your listeners to stay connected. You can find us at Instagram. We will be sure to tag Kelsey throughout this week and bring all questions you have for us into her so you can respond back. And let's just continue this journey of sharing loving empowerment for women's health and just helping each other. Which is so important for the future as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vi høres. Yeah.